Hi, everybody. Thursday, September 4th, 2025, and our friend Andrey Martyanov is back with us. Welcome back, Andrey.
My pleasure, always.
Andrey, I want to talk about the parade, the military parade in China. Mm-hmm. And many people are talking about the weapons, that what was new, what was old. And here is, we had a report on Sky News. They're talking about the kind of weapons that mm-hmm. China using this parade. Here is the report, Andre. It's literally 2 minutes, but it's important to know what they're trying to say to us.
Parade showed us lots of military equipment. Interesting question is, which bits of those equipment would worry the Americans and some of the other allies? There was the DF-61, which is an intercontinental ballistic missile. They've got lots of those, but this was the newest one, and of course, it can reach Europe, it can reach the United States. There was famously the directed energy weapon, the OW-5A-10, which is actually a laser gun. Apparently, that can bring down lots of drones all at once. We'll see how good it is. More worrying to the United States in particular was the DF-17, and that is a hypersonic missile. Now, that means it can fly at 5 times the speed of sound, Mach 5, which is 6,000 miles an hour. That makes it very difficult to defend against. And even more, the DF-17 was shown to us in a maritime version. So there's a version that can go to sea, and that really is a threat to any big American battleships or aircraft carriers or anything. Of the more exotic sort, we saw the AJX-002, which is the submarine drone, and that's a sort of cross between a submarine and a torpedo, and it can do the job of both. It can act as a submarine, doing everything that submarines do without anyone on board, or it can just be a massive torpedo and detonate itself with a massive warhead against pretty well anything. And then there's the GJ-11, the sharp sword, and that's an aircraft, a drone aircraft without a pilot, that can fly alongside an aircraft that's got a pilot in it. So one pilot could control 4 or 5 wingmen who were with that pilot and simply acting as their own independent air group. Now, Western militaries are all working on these sort of things. They've got their own programs to do exactly that. But the Chinese would have us believe that they've already got there. Not sure if that's true, but that's what they want us to believe.
Andrey, this is the way that they're trying to picture what has happened in China. And in your opinion, from your point of view, what was important about the parade in terms of weapons and the policy?
Yeah, it wasn't the weapons. There are many questions which are totally legitimate. And actually, Michael Clark, he was surprisingly, objective, relaxed about it. And he said many things which otherwise any military professional, I'm not sure how professional he is, but yeah, it's pretty much, you know, those weasel type, you know, platitudes and things like that, which anybody would say. But reality is, it wasn't even the fact that weapons like this torpedo, I mean, it's attempt at copying their, obviously Poseidon, which have been in development for 2 decades and now isn't official. But it's a completely different story with the Poseidon. But yes, it's, you can see yourself, there's nothing wrong with demonstrating your technological prowess. But it's not the main even point. It was the organization, the magnificence of the parade, you know, the way they marched, you know, the way it was, you know, manifested, and which was, you know, coming across as a powerful show of force and resolve on the part of Chinese, not government, but people. And the fact that they finally said, you know what, there is a reason why we are permanent members of the Security Council of the United Nations. We are 1 of 5 victors. I don't know how France ended up there, but okay, that's the whole other story. You know, China certainly deserved its place, apart from the fact that sustaining slightly less, but I mean, in 20 plus million casualties and mostly civilians in a war against Japan, which started in 1931. And then, you know, actually, Red Army already, Halhin Gol, you know, famous battle where Zhukov destroyed, you know, the Japanese formations and things of this nature. And obviously Chinese fought the Japanese. So United States got into this war in 1941. And obviously, China suddenly says, which is correctly, this is our victory, you know? Obviously, I understand why, and this is absolutely justifiable, that obviously there is an American lament and justifiable American consternation that, oh yeah, they're going to downplay our role. Obviously, we know that the United States played a critical role in defeating Imperial Japan, especially because it was primarily, well, not primarily, but naval component, U.S. Navy fought brilliantly and bravely, you know, so did the Marines, so nobody tries to, well, there are some people, let's face it, you know, they try to kind of diminish their American role. But at the same time, as I did in my last video yesterday, don't forget about Donald Trump and American historians who say, hey, you know what, United States defeated it all. Yeah, those Russians, you know, those Chinese, they're just sideshows, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, back and forth. But the point is, it was the whole presentation. It was the decorum, so to speak, of this parade, which really mattered. Poor technological aspect, we have to discuss it absolutely separately, especially in terms of the intercontinental ballistic missiles. But other than that, yes, it was very impressive. And again, you look at how the personnel marches, how it is all brought up. It's enormously powerful, you know. So, and then, of course, you have those delegations, you know, you have those leaders from all around the world, you know. So it's, especially when it followed on even more representative, you know, meeting at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And so, It was the whole 4 days of the massive demonstration of how the world changed. We live not only in a multipolar world, we live in the world where SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, this big three begin to dominate it and begin to shape it, especially Global South. Many people forget that the combined West is something roughly 800, 900 million people. The rest of it is not West at all.
Andre, how did you find the participation of India? If I'm not mistaken, after seven years, Modi went to China. What does it tell us? What is the outcome? Let's put it this way. I because my main point is, who caused Modi to go to China?
Well, he is a very shrewd political figure. He's definitely the statesman. He's definitely the head of the now most populous country in the world. It's more populous than China, especially considering the slowdown in China's demographics, which probably is not that bad. I mean, it's just too colossal there. And he definitely knows where the winds of history blow. He's a very smart man. And suddenly, you have this situation, which India was part of it anyway. India was a part of BRICS, you know, and Shanghai Cooperation Organization and all that. And suddenly you have this simple calculations. Add India to the mix of China and Russia, you have the most powerful economically and militarily alliance in the world, in the history, more powerful than NATO. Okay, and so you look at Antwerp, and then you'll have what? Huge part of population, and you represent absolutely new page in human history. Of course you want to be on the winning side. There's nothing wrong with this. I mean, you know, as everybody knows, the victory has very many fathers. Only defeat is always an orphan, you know? So there's nothing wrong with India, which is a contributor, which is a country which has to finally decide, you know, the path it takes. And Modi basically did what was supposed to be done by any shrewd and smart statesman. And he went to China. And then suddenly what you have is, and again, the last 96 hours, I mean, what, right? Yeah, 96, 4 days, that's it. We live in a completely new world. I mean, it was officially stated essentially there. And yeah, after India got the spine back and told United States to go pound sand, there you go. everything you need to know, especially against the background of today's statements by Mr. Trump, that Europe should stop buying Russian oil. So, okay. You know what is going on, you know. So, and yeah, you, when you are as big as India, despite India's huge problems, there is no denial of that, you know. But when you are so huge, including economically, still it's massive economy there. So, and not all of it is just some consumer goods. They do produce, you know, some. They do have a very developed industrial sector and things like that. You got to go where their future is. And the future is, as have been stated by me for second decade now, officially, it's in the Eurasian land mass. It is, you know what, Eurasia. So, what can I say? Yeah, there you go. You make your choices and you know you're going to benefit from them. I mean, simple, you know what, analysis of the, you know, the profitability, so to speak, and benefit, cost-benefit analysis, and there you go.
I think when we look at China and Russia, we can say that nothing can separate one from another. And how do you feel about India? Where is India in that calculation? Is India is getting so close that they're not going to be, it's not going to be easy for the United States to separate them from Russia and China?
It seems like now, obviously, we cannot say whatever happens to the dynamics inside.
Andre, I think we've lost you. Yeah. It seems that Andre has some sort of problem with the internet connection. Let me try to contact him. Yeah, he's... Yeah. I'm trying to contact him. Just a minute. Are you coming up, Andre? Okay. He's coming up, yeah. It was some sort of problem with his connection. We don't know what was that, but he's going to be back in a second. Yeah, actually, he's back. Yeah, you're back.
I'm sorry, it's CIA which tries to interrupt all of it, you know. So,
Just repeat the question. Yeah, the question was the case of India. Is India so close to Russia and China that we can say that the West cannot separate them from these two countries or the coalition, the SCO, and what's going on in the East? And I'm talking about Russia, China, and the kind of alternative that they're trying to make.
Difficult to say. We know that sometimes India is shaky, and of course they are led by, as many people are, and many states are, by benefits. So, but it is obvious that on the balance right now, the benefit is actually with China and Russia. There's no doubt about it. And again, many people forget, India imports a tremendous amount of Russian weaponry, and we're talking about high-end weaponry. If anybody takes a look at the India's Navy latest frigates, you know, Talwar class, they are essentially Admiral Grigorovich class of Russian frigates. and you look at the Brahmas, and then guess what? Today's news. Today's India wants more of S-400s. So make your own conclusion. And, you know, they're also discussing now the issue of the Su-57s. And so that's India always was a huge, you know, basically customer of the Soviet and Russian military industrial complex. And I can tell you one thing. Yeah, they evidently had issues with Rafals performing properly during the, unlike it was the case with S-400, which Modi praised, you know, like nonstop. So yeah, it's how to put it. And then of course, energy. We live in the civilization which requires increasingly more and more energy. The combined West cannot provide this. The only people who can provide, well, the only country which can provide it all is Russia. Something just happened like this, you know? So looking at pay, I mean, again, the benefits are there.
Andrei, one of the points that she was trying to make, it was that we have to choose between war and peace and cooperation and confrontation, or win-win cooperation, zero-sum game. And he's talking directly with the United States with his mentioning that. Do you think that China is still afraid of the United States doing some sort of move, military move toward China?
I mean, it's not afraid. It's wary. Let's put it this way. I don't think China is afraid, especially since China found its mojo, so to speak, you know, starting from the mid-2010s. So, and of course, China has Russia, you know, Russia has China's back. There's no doubt about it. So, but nobody wants war. Nobody wants confrontation. And it, you have to always keep in mind that Washington, D.C. is filled with mad nut jobs, you know, just basically people. One of the reasons being that America doesn't know what war is. They have this whiteboard ideas about it, but nobody in the United States, nobody, zero. There are now people, including military, people who do understand what continental warfare is. They never experienced it. Not a single American serviceman lost his family, his wife, children to enemy fire. They have never had their houses burned. You know, they just don't. They have no concept of it. You know, all those veterans also, they killed somebody else in some kind of, you know, remote areas. They never defended their families. They don't know what it is. They don't understand the psychological, you know, what basically setup of all that, because there is no reference point, historically, culturally, what have you. And so basically China understands it. They lost enormous amount of people, number of people during the Japanese occupation and during the war there. So China has a very good understanding of the price. America doesn't. So, and that's how you, the same goes for Russia, for example. Are Russians afraid of you? I said, no, but they are very, that there are, you know, there are all kinds of nut jobs, like that was the with the case with the Biden administration, who think that they are, you know what, invulnerable because they're morons. I mean, you look at the military education and most American strategists, you know, which are near power and concentrate and congregate in the Washington, D.C., most of them are cretins, basically. You know, they don't understand the first thing about what it, you know, entails and what other ramifications. If you go to some stupid senator, you cannot explain to Lindsey Graham that his address is known. He doesn't even understand that, you know what, Russians can literally launch missile which will fly into his door, because they are all fed up with the Hollywood propaganda, not understanding that technologically United States lost the arms race by a mile. It's not even, it's a knockout essentially. But they still believe all this BS, you know, so because they are not educated people. They are primarily, you know what, militant humanities degree dumbed down people, economists, political scientists, you know, people who have no clue, you know, and as a result, you have this aggressive posture, apart from the fact that what is happening in terms of the, well, generally foreign policy of the United States, which is controlled by the Zionists and all kinds of people of this nature. They call it war hawks. They're chicken hawks, most of them, including American generals who would be laughed out of the, you know, what tactical level units in Russia as being incompetent. So, and that's when you have this situation. It's that, yeah, you have to tread cautiously, because if you trigger some insecure bunch in Washington, D.C., and they are extremely insecure, a narcissist like Trump, for example, who knows what they can do, you know? Again, you have to treat the United States at this stage as a madman. And that's what Russians and Chinese do. You know, but militarily, yeah, if the United States begins any kind of serious war, it will cease to exist. It's simple as that, you know. And what can I say? It just has to be constantly reminded to political and military elites in the United States that they will die. Together with their families, their property, it will be a parking lot, basically, if they don't understand what they're dealing with.
Andre, you remember the head of military in Japan, U.S. military in Japan, he said that by 2025, during the Biden administration, by 2025, they're going to have some sort of military conflict directly with China. And this was somehow reiterated by the U.S. ambassador to NATO on Fox News. What he said, Andre.
These other countries are having to respond. And, you know, China, I will note, I mean, most of the military equipment they demonstrated in this parade was technology most likely stolen from the United States or our allies. And, you know, they can't, couldn't fight the United States if they tried. You know, we are the only world superpower with the biggest, strongest economy. And that's what we need to continue to do. We need to continue to invest in our defense. And we also need to make sure that we continue to protect the American dream and the American entrepreneur.
Are they really doing this, Andre?
Because it is an imbecile, as you would expect from any product of the American education nowadays, you know, and the system which the guy is a clown. And he speaks like 1984. It's the kind of double speak. It's not even double speak. It's this, set of the words which are bear no significance of anything. They don't have any meaning. He repeats the tropes, you know, it's garbage, essentially, verbal garbage, verbal diarrhea. But then again, yesterday, this moron, Jesse, whatever his name, this smug asshole, pardon my French, you know, from Fox News, he said that, you know, power of Siberia has to be blown up, you know. So you cannot explain that basically everything what you have currently, in American political and media elites, they're a bunch of the immoral cretins, basically. They advocate for terrorism, which they're weak. They're, and this Whitaker guy, I don't know, it's a verbal diarrhea. He spews something that I'm not understanding even. Take an average American general, okay, from some kind of, or get any professor from the whatever, you know, the general staff and command college from, you know, what, Leavenworth, Kansas. They won't even pass the entrance exams for the Russian military, serious military academy. They don't have basis. They're all this whiteboard, you know, what demagogues who talk about this and that, not understanding that United States never was great military power in terms of, it always had a great, you know, Navy, and it had impressive Air Force. But then again, it never fought real war, which it ever won. It always loses it, you know. So, and when you talk about these people, and you talk about this military, political, whatever, them, it's cabal, basically, you know, this echo chamber, they are, it's a death cult, they repeat all those mantras. Some of them believe it, which is pathetic, you know. But when you look at them, country which venerates Patton as great general, there's something wrong with this army, okay, if they venerate him like that, you know. So that means they don't know military history, they don't understand operational art, and operations, and we saw it. Come on, we saw this beautiful planning of counteroffensive. It was planning by people like Donahue and Guda, you know, those top-notch guys, you know, those, you know what, the respectable people. And They killed more than 160,000 of personnel. They never reached even the first line of defense. But that tells you that basically they are amateurs, essentially. You know, they operate within this bunch of the, you know, pile, the heap of the military theories, which have nothing to do with real warfare. But you cannot explain it to them because they're arrogant. But some arrogant, others, the arrogance is being the actually the adverse side of the total insecurity. Because the only thing which you can always ask those people in Pentagon, show me the money, show me the record. You lost all your wars. You cannot even freaking plan their operations or by division, you know, let alone by the large armies. They just have no experience of that. They still grasp, you know what, this Gulf War 1.0. Really? I mean, if I tell that I just came out and kicked the ass of the five-year-old kid in the sandbox, you know, does it make me proud? No. So it's, but they don't study anything, really. They really don't. Look at the, and we know that, for example, the academic level, or rather lack thereof, in all those military academies, especially when you look attentively at the military academy at the West Point, they, I don't know, it's just unbelievable.
Andre, do you find this situation with Venezuela serious about the...
I don't know. I really don't know. And as Garland Nixon stated, for all we care, the whatever videos and photos, or they're showing there could be from their old shots, you know, old videos from some years back. So I don't know. It's difficult for me to say. I mean, a lot of it is done for the sake of PR and... who knows? Yeah.
It's somehow, it seems that it's a PR operation. Somehow.
Yeah, mostly. Yeah, it's yeah.
Okay, cannot imagine the United States under the Trump administration being that stupid to go to Venezuela. That's gonna be a huge problem for them.
I don't know.
If they go there.
Not for me to say. Yeah, I'm not specialist in Latin America. I know some things, but again, you have to understand, Trump administration is filled with the chicken hawks, you know, and morons like Marco Rubio, or, you know, whatever they want to perform there, I don't know. It's, we're living in the complete idiocracy, honestly, right?
Andre, I think one of the most important things during this summit we've learned from that, it was an agreement between Russia and China on the power of Siberia, the pipeline number two, to be built from Russia to China going through
Mongolia. Yeah. Yeah. And they're missing also another pipeline from Sakhalin, by the way. There are actually three pipelines now. So in that, yeah. The Gazprom latest
that goes through Mongolia as well, or
no? It goes directly to China somehow through Russian Far East. But yeah, you can. I'll send you the link, and actually, it's in my video. It's the latest Gazprom scheme. But yeah, it's obviously it's only 10 billion. Only it's still huge number, 10 billion cubic meters from Sakhalin. But yeah, the rest, the gigantic power of Siberia too. It's now called Union East. That's how it's called. It's not Power of Siberia 2. Anyway, it's now Union East.
I don't know how the West can somehow make some sort of problems for the projects. Andre, at the same time that we are witnessing what's going on between Russia and China, you see Europe is moving with this coalition of the willing and all of these sort of moves. Do you feel that these people, do they really care about what's going on with their economy? Are they really, do they really feel that they need to do something about Europe, to do something about their economy, or they don't care about anything in Europe?
They need war to stay in power. That's the only thing. Today, SVR, the service, the Foreign Intelligence Service of Russia, issued a statement about, for example, Nord. He's from the Nazi family. he is obsessed with, as much of the population, not all, obviously, but much of the population of Germany is obsessed with sticking it to Russians, you know, because obviously it was Red Army which destroyed the Third Reich. So, and yeah, you don't have normal people. They are mostly cowards and mental, and they are desperate because they sense. I'm not even sure most of them will even understand their actually the mechanics of what they're experiencing right now. They simply don't have toolkit. Most of them are lawyers or like von der Leyen, she's gynecologist. And yeah, I never, you know what, I never heard about gynecologist armored personnel carrier, you know, commanders or something like that. I mean, but yeah, these are the people. These are the people. This is a panopticon. It's a circus. And as a result, yeah, for example, Macron needs war, Merz needs war, Starmer needs war, because their economies are, they are bankrupt. Their countries are, Europe is done. It's over for Europe. And the question is not what they're going to be buying through, for example, India in terms of oil. It's just that United States has them buy the gonads right now. And yeah, they will be buying three times the price their liquefied natural gas from United States when it is available for Europe. So Europe is over. That's it. They have nothing. They are paupers, essentially, you know. So, and in the world which lives and buy and swears by energy, and again, it's increasing, you know, dramatically each year. Yeah, the European economy is going to be dead very, very soon. And it's not just a matter of finances, it's deindustrialization. So, you know.
Andrei, looking at Armenia and Azerbaijan being invited to the SCO summit, what is that? Do you think that China is somehow trying to communicate with them, considering their projects, Chinese project, the Belt and Road Initiative, which is regional? All these countries all together want to do that. How is that, in your opinion?
It's possible, but they're not that important because in the end, it's Russia's backyard. And as it is always the case with the Limitrovs, it's just they try to find the better, so to speak, you know, the sponsor, if you wish. But reality is both are insignificant in the sense that Russians already basically explained to Azerbaijan in no uncertain terms that if they continue to play all kinds of nasty games, such as allowing their drones flying from their territories, including against Iran, by the way, of which Iranian foreign ministry already told them directly, we know you are the guys who provided the Israelis with, you know, the launching pads. And of course, there was a panic in Baku. So yeah, if they continue to play those stupid games, is they're going to get it really bad. It's already hurting Aliyev, for example, government and they call Aliyev regime, whatever, badly. Now, per you, Armenia, they still believe that diaspora is greatest, you know, the French Armenian diaspora, that Armenian, the California Armenian diaspora. Well, if they want to disappear as a nation, it's their thing. You know, for the first time, they thought that they represent some kind of value, you know, for Russians. And the Russians say, okay, yeah, sure, go right ahead. You know, so people do not understand how it all changed technologically, economically, militarily, what have you. That suddenly what was the was truth 30 years ago, when they, oh my God, you know, Transcaucasia, Russian soft underbelly, sure. Yeah. Oh, British want to put the base there. Sure. Mr. Iskander is ready to visit it when it comes down, and it's going to be done within 10 minutes. And so, yeah, it's so simple now, you know, and that's the problem, obviously, that many people do not understand. They still play this 19th century or first half of the 20th century, you know, geopolitics, geography, you know, so to speak, where all those centers of powers are located. Sure. But as long as the United States doesn't put its missiles there, it should be fine, you know. But the point is that, how to say it, we saw what happened in the last 3.5 years, and that pretty much self-explanatory.
Andrei, you talk about, you mentioned India and the way that they're getting closer to Russia and China. How about Turkey. How do you see the situation with Turkey, considering Israel saying that it seems that in the eyes of Israelis, Turkey is growing to be a bigger problem than Iran?
So because far,
that would somehow push Turkey to the east more.
If Turkey wants to survive, it certainly should do it. How they will shoot themselves into their foot, I don't know, but they will, believe me. So, and we all know that, again, they declared that they break off all kinds of the relations with Israel, economic relations. They are part of the, you know, the supply of the oil, which is critical for genocide by IDF and Israel. So, but yeah, it's Turkey. And especially Erdogan government, they don't have principles. They have only desire to sit on all chairs simultaneously. And but, I mean, come on, there is a logic of circumstances, okay? If Turkey wants to survive and at least thrive somehow, yeah, its way is towards BRICS. If not, well, it's Turkish problem, you know, so, and let them be mired in this, you know, what, quagmire, literally, in the Middle East. So, yeah, it's difficult to say, really. Erdogan is, yeah, although Vladimir Putin called him reliable partner, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek almost, you know, so it's, we'll see.
Yeah. Andre, here is the picture we had from Gerasimov in his briefing that you see the map on the wall that shows that Odessa, Nikolaev, and going to Kharkov, part of Russia, Novorossiya. Is that some sort of, I don't know, are they trying, what is the point of this map? Let's put it this way, in your opinion.
Well, eventually, this will be all decided. As Vladimir Putin stated clearly again, time after time after time, you know, Russian state thing, and then it's immediately being covered and clouded by the all amount of BS from Western media and Mr. Trump himself, who obviously is having schizophrenic moments. And I'm not even sure he is any more competent to hold any kind of the, you know, substantial discussion. But we are beginning to have, you know, almost Mr. Biden's, you know, second, you know, repetition of Biden administration in some sense. So, no, it's Vladimir Putin stated, again, just a couple days ago, he stated that in the end, people of those territories have to decide by the voting. So, and he obviously doesn't talk about those new four oblasts, which are now part of Russian Federation. And no. He's talking about something. And again, is how to say it? You don't have to capture it now. You don't. I mean, you can. Can Russia, for example, get them militarily? Oh, absolutely. Why would Russia waste lives of the Russian soldiers doing this when you can launch the process, which eventually comes with the collapse of the front, which is ongoing? And so what can I say? You know, at some point of time, those territories will have to have the right to vote. Wink, wink. And they will at some point of time. So why go and take them by the fire and sword, if you wish, you know, when eventually there will be a political decision and they will become either independent initially entities or they'll just join Russia, you know. So, yeah, Russians are not in Russia. And believe me, Russians already had their hands full with all those four new oblasts, you know, which still they're clearing them from their corruption, utter corruption and organized crime from left from Ukraine, you know. So it's why would Russia put those now on its neck, you know, so to speak? Let them kind of gestate, let them kind of cure a little bit more until they are ready, and then it will happen. Meanwhile, special military operation continues, and as Vladimir Putin stated, if they don't want to solve it, I quote 2 days ago, 48 hours ago, if they do not want to do it politically, we'll do it militarily. Simple as that. I don't know how else you can even interpret this anymore.
Do you expect that we're going to have some sort of escalation in in the war in Ukraine? Because the Keir Starmer said that he announced that the coalition that they're calling coalition of the willing is prepared to supply Ukraine with long-range missiles. I don't know if without the permission from the United States, how are they able to do that?
They already did. What a load of BS is this. They repeat Taurus, it probably already flew, Scalp, Storm Shadow. They have been using them since 2022. So this is all PR. Starmer's an idiot. He's a Zionist here. Well, British, you know, people, I'm sorry for them, really. So, and what long range? Yeah, that's the only thing they have. They don't have anything more. Starmer in United Kingdom has no access, independent access to, for example, TLAM, which is Tomahawk Land Attack Missile. It's an American weapon, and Americans are not going to supply it, because in the end, it will end up with basically Aegis ashore at Devasello and in Poland destroyed. You know, so you have those clowns, those chihuahuas, people without serious military, which is, of course, France, if you remove their small nuclear deterrent, United Kingdom and Bundeswehr, they are pathetic. I'm not talking about other even smaller, you know, the pocket dogs, you know, such as Netherlands or Italy. So they don't have armies. They don't have real serious, you know, armed forces. So, and whenever he says about, oh, yeah, long range, we supply this with what? Oh, they have this flamingo thing, which Russians love their, you know, it's unbelievable. It's all PR. This is the only thing they can do. They have no real skills in life. Okay, none. They don't have education. They're morons. They graduated from those degree mills in Oxford, you know, or elsewhere with degrees in nothing. Like Boris Johnson, he had a degree in literature, English literature. So what can I say? Yeah, that surely is a good thing to run the countries, you know. So, and what can I say? That's why we talk about the end of the West. The Western idea of the governance is that, you know, that's the whole thing which people do not understand. You cannot prepare them in some kind of courses and get them in Sorbonne and study politics. Really? The imbecile with the room, you know, IQ above the room temperature, you know, slightly, can study politics if he puts his mind into it. These are not serious sciences. These are not serious skills. These are all garbage, basically, to give the soft degrees for diplomas for good old boys and girls to, you know what, congregate and get themselves promoted on the service of some kind of the financial oligarchy. That's who they are. Most of them are morons. Their militaries are morons. I mean, in military education, as bad as it is in the United States, my God, in Europe, it's a joke. It's a joke. You literally have people who are, they have no clue, actually. Not all, but most of them. They have those big, you know, epaulets, and, you know, they go through all those, you know what, the Bundeswehr, general staff, or whatever the courses. And what do they study there? Well, we know what do they study there. And it's useless.
Andre, Macron, after this meeting, the coalition of the willing, he said that new sanctions against Russia will be coordinated with the United States if Moscow continues to refuse peace talks. I don't know. Is there anything in the Russian media talking about peace talks being refused by Russia? I haven't heard about it.
No. Russians don't care anymore, really.
What he's talking about, peace talks, is
Macron. His government is shaky, and the guy is, we know who he is, and his wife, husband, whatever the hell the name of this thing is, we know who they are. We know what French wanted. We know what is happening to France. France is not going to be around in 20 years. Probably even earlier than that. So they are panicking there. And so they talk about things which are not happening. They live in the alternative universe, and they do this deliberately to, you know what, confuse their already brainwashed public, okay? So what can I say? I mean, I know that actually Trump told that he's not intend to impose new sanctions on Russia. Russians don't care, impose whatever you want. So, but that's what he told. It was the last one which I read, kind of like half an hour before I went, you know, on meeting with you. So yeah, let them discuss, let them issue statements. They're nobodies, they're irrelevant. Europe is irrelevant. United States is irrelevant, but Europe is even more so. At least United States has agency to a degree when it's not controlled completely by the Zionist and the donor class, but Europe is an object. It means the thing which you can do whatever you want with it. You know what? It's not a subject. It doesn't have subjectivity and it doesn't have sovereignty anymore. You know, especially Macron, especially France, which is the laughing stock of the world, you know? So they still think that they are so such great. Well, the only thing great about them is obviously Airbus. But then again, it's international consortium. It's all kinds of other countries, you know, have been at their, you know, at the beginning of this corporation, which produces very good planes, no doubt about it. But other than that, militarily, they're Lilliputian, you know, and economically, they, yeah, when you have the your economy, the largest company in France actually is not Airbus or Renault. It's actually Bertrand Arnault's selling overpriced crap to imbeciles who want to feel themselves very, you know, what, rich and. And you know what I'm talking about, Louis Vuitton, all kinds of champagnes. And as I already stated, that's what they sell. Granted, I always make this exception in fine print, you know what, except for the colognes and perfumes. Yeah, they're still best.
So. Andre, before wrapping up, we had Israeli attack on Yemen. Mm-hmm. From your military point of view, when it comes to the strategy, military strategy, what is that all about? What this sort of attack that doesn't, they even didn't attack Houthis. They attacked a government and no, most of these people are, they're not connected that much with Houthis and they kill all of them, civilians.
Yeah.
How someone in Israel, let's assume we are in Israel, you're talking to these people who are deciding about these attacks. What is the logic behind it, in your opinion?
Desperation. The Israel may cease to exist at some point of time soon, you know, and we saw the performance of the IDF, which is good only at committing genocide, fighting real war, not so much. And if you look, potentially who they have as their leader or leaders, war criminals. Well, what can I say? They are desperate, they're lashing out. But obviously, as already have been stated, Yemen and Houthis, of course, they already did it and they will continue to do it. There will be revenge. And yeah, that's the only thing they are capable of. They are not good at fighting real war. Whenever the Israel decided to fight something, you know, in the 21st century, it had its ass handed to it, you know. So they're not that good. So, yeah, it's all of it is primarily have been done through the Hollywood and other APAC and Israeli propaganda into the United States, you know, what blowing this out of the proportion. While in reality, is they are not that good of an army. They have some kind of air force, and which, by the way, if you take a look attentively, it took a serious beating during the Arab-Israeli conflict, especially in 1973. So it's like, okay, yeah, and again, I don't want to be again accused of some kind of racism, which there is none. But Arabs do not have a good war record, to put it mildly. Okay, in the modern time, so they just they're courageous people. Many of them are courageous people, make no mistake, and many are good partisan fighters, guerrilla fighters. But in terms of the modern warfare, like combined arms and things like that, first they don't have technology, and first they are not that good at it, to put it mildly. So yeah, that's probably the level at which IDF can, you know what, assert itself, and even that doesn't work in the 21st century. But after situation with Iran and this 12 days exchange, we know, everybody knows, Israel begged United States to do something about it because they were having their assets handed to them by Iran. You know, and so that's what it is. And then, of course, this play between basically Iranian leadership and Trump with this, oh yeah, this bombing by B2 of some, oh my God, it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And they call it serious militaries.
Andre, before wrapping up, I really don't feel that Donald Trump, after all this chaos that we are witnessing, he's not the man to go to war. Do you feel that? Or
well, yeah, he obviously cannot even renounce his claim, at least. No, he's a warmonger still, you know. He loves to talk about it.
But he brags a lot, but he doesn't go that far.
Yeah, evidently, you know, what is somehow limited in his desire to go to real war, you know. So, yeah, there is a feel of that. He's definitely not Biden, and he definitely has at least some people through such people as Tulsi Gabbard who try to explain to them that, dude, it's going to end up really badly. I like it as the case with all those, you know, what clowns from, you know, what it's just unbelievable. His administration, it's complete dysfunction again. The guy is incapable to, he is real, is the New York real estate shyster with the daddy issues. Of course, okay, his daddy didn't like him, and the boy tries to improve, you know. So this is, it's a kindergarten, okay? From Langley to Pentagon to Arlington, it's a kindergarten. These guys do not know anything but to how to, you know what, project themselves and, you know, do this propaganda, PR and everything. You ask them about tangibles, what can you do, how you do this, what you get F-35, okay? That's what it is.
Thank you so much, Andre, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.